They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by Prosper.com, America's marketplace for people-to-people loans. Prosper.com, where you can compete to bid on loans to fellow Americans.
No relief from OPEC.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. More than 40% of the world's oil comes through OPEC. The cartel's ministers met today in Abu Dhabi to consider pumping more. That would bring relief to economies stung by near-record prices. Indications are OPEC will keep production steady for now. Let's bring in Robin Pagnamenta of The Times in London. Now, Robin, given crude prices are down about 10% in the last 2 weeks, that drop has taken some pressure off of OPEC to raise production. But the dollar has been very weak. And how much of a factor was that in keeping production steady?
Well, it's certainly an issue that was the subject of a lot of discussion at the OPEC heads of state summit meeting in Riyadh last month. They were discussing whether or not oil should be priced in a basket of currencies other than the dollar. You know, the weak dollar has undermined the value of earnings. So even though we've seen oil close to $100 a barrel, some countries have been complaining that their revenues have not been sufficient. OPEC views oil prices a little bit like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. They want prices to be high, but not so high as to encourage consumers to seek out alternatives.
So early indications then seem to be that they will keep production targets unchanged. Now we look to the March meeting. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, it's possible that they may decide to lift production in March. The increase that they announced in September actually only came on stream at the beginning of November, and there are also some other things going on within the oil market. For example, Angola and Iraq are also likely to increase production by at least 200,000 barrels a day. So there is going to be a sort of natural increase in supplies coming onto the market, which may have an impact on prices.
Robin Pagnamenta is business correspondent for The Times in London. Robin, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
This morning, crude oil is trading up $2 to $90.39 the barrel. So from oil to interest rates, we're less than a week away from the Fed's meeting. A rate cut seems like a done deal. The question is, how hefty will it be? Do they cut a quarter point or a half? Then there's the larger issue of whether these rate cuts are curing the credit crunch. Shares in the big money center banks got hit yesterday. Credit problems will continue to take a bite out of their earnings. The Dow was down 65 to 13,248. The S&P gave back 9 points. The Nasdaq slid 17. Now, the major markets in Asia moved higher overnight. Europe is up too. Stock futures are pointing to a higher open for Wall Street.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by BNY Mellon Wealth Management. Since 1784, helping successful individuals and families protect and maximize wealth. BNYMellonWealthManagement.com. And by Grant Thornton, dedicated to serving their clients worldwide with a passion for the business of accounting. On the web at GrantThornton.com. Science and technology reports are supported by Boston Scientific, committed to delivering what's next in medical technology to help clinicians improve and extend lives. BostonScientific.com.
Subprime mortgages have become a curse. With all the economic damage they've done, it's easy to forget they made it possible for many to buy their first homes, especially immigrants who had yet to build up good credit. So how are these new homeowners faring now? From the America's Desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch has one story.
Catalina Bryan is from the Dominican Republic. When she arrived in the U.S., she found work in the only business she knew, sewing, from 6 a.m. to midnight for 40 years.
Cosiendo. 40 años.
Catalina raised her son Ramon in 8 different homes, always on the move in search of a safer neighborhood. Ramon says there was one constant, the click of the sewing machine.
There's a lot of mothers out there that wouldn't make the type of sacrifice my mom made for me, so I feel indebted to her for life.
Ramon was the first person in his family to graduate high school, to finish college, to get an MBA. He began repaying his debt to his mom in Thanksgiving of 2001, when he bought her a brand new house.
It was a surreal feeling, like just being in the living room of our new home. Like, all the furniture was still in boxes, and we're like eating turkey on the floor. And I'm just looking around and just like, wow, you know, I did it.
Ramon started his career in ad sales, but a cousin lured him into real estate finance. He started working for Resme, a subprime mortgage lender. He made $30,000 in a single month.
Then your mind starts wandering. You see it as, okay, I made 30 this month. It's going to stay like that. You know, me being a business person as well, I'm like, let me buy some more property and hold on to it.
Subprime lending, much maligned now, did offer many Hispanics like Ramon Bryan the opportunity to own a home. The number of Hispanic homeowners nationwide jumped by nearly 50% in just 7 years. Ramon sold that American dream, and he bought it, too. He purchased the home for his mom, another for himself, his childhood condo, and an investment property. All four have adjustable-rate mortgages. All four are subprime loans. Ramon leased an office to go into business for himself. Then the mortgage market crashed. Now he's out of a job, and he's on the hook for $16,000 a month. Plus, he supports his mother.
You pick up the mail, and there's like a ton of bills, and you see a lot of money going out of your bank account and not as much money coming in. I've worked really hard to get to where I'm at, and I don't want to lose it. So how do I keep it?
Ramon's looking for a job back in ad sales. He was forced to rent the house he bought for his mom. Catalina's back in their cramped childhood condo. A framed photo of Ramon in a cap and gown hangs by her bedroom door. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Now, Fannie Mae is the largest source of money for mortgages in this country, but the subprime crisis has weakened its health quite a bit, and so now Fannie Mae is cutting its dividend 30%. The company is also selling $7 billion in special stock to raise money. Fannie is hoping that'll be enough to cushion it against losses in those lower quality mortgages. In Los Angeles, I'm Doug Krisner. Thanks for listening. Make it a good day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.